I'll be calling up in Los Angeles Victor Nieblas Pardis, and he is an adjunct professor of law at Loyola School in LA. He's an immigration lawyer and treasurer of the American Immigration Lawyers Association Board of Governors. And we're going to be talking about immigration and what's been happening recently with the DREAM Act and the various states, what they've been doing, enacting, and some recent activity this month, in fact, in the for immigration policies in the Senate and House. Lydia Mendoza y Familia, Mexico, una laguna, and I know my pronunciation is bad, but perhaps Victor Nieblas, who's on the phone, can help me with that. Hi, Victor.
Hi, good evening. How are you, sir?
Well, very good, thank you. As I say, I'm with Salvi Babul.
Hola, Victor. Este es Salvi Babul.
Encantado de estar contigo.
Igualmente, y gracias por la invitación.
Sabemos que hay muchos latinos alrededor del área que están interesados en el tema, por eso queremos hacer un poco en castellano también.
¿Cómo no? De los dos lenguajes, mientras el mensaje salga, eso es lo importante.
Encantado.
Okay, well, thank you. And I say, you don't have to translate it into English and Spanish. We can let it roll as it comes out, Victor.
Will do, no problem.
No problem at all. We'll just jump in there. Now, to get some background, Victor, you belong, you are an immigration lawyer. Could you tell us something about yourself and the AILA, what you're affiliated with?
Sure, no problem. First of all, I am an immigrant, and I'm also an immigration attorney. I teach immigration law at Loyola Law School here in Los Angeles, and I'm also the national treasurer for the American Immigration Lawyers Association. It's an organization of over 11,000 immigration attorneys across the United States, and we not only defend immigrants, but we lobby for positive immigration reform, and we also help our members make sure that everybody understands the immigration laws, because they can be very complex and difficult to understand.
Well, exactly, and it seems they're getting more complicated as the days go on. Obviously, what drew you to the immigration law was you were an immigrant. How did you get into the law from coming into America?
Well, you know what's interesting is that I was born in Mexicali, Baja California, Mexico, right on the U.S.-Mexican border. I was raised right across the border in Calexico, California. So immigration issues were certainly part of my upbringing. I lived two blocks away from the local Border Patrol station. My next-door neighbor was a Border Patrol agent. My neighbor across the street was a DEA agent. So certainly these issues, I couldn't run away from these issues, and certainly when I went into law school, I knew that I wanted to know more about immigration law, and certainly that led me into actually practicing immigration law.
Well, excellent. What better basis to start from? And Salvi, do you have a question at all?
Yes. Victor, entiendo que hay un proyecto que se llama The DREAM Act. ¿Nos podrías contar tú un poco de qué es lo que significa DREAM Act, las siglas, a qué es lo que corresponde, cuál es la historia y en qué momento está este proyecto?
Claro. Claro, mucho gusto. Primeramente, pues el DREAM Act, conocido nosotros como la propuesta del sueño, ya tiene 10 años que se ha presentado en el Congreso, y es un proyecto de ley que le ayudaría a inmigrantes, a personas sin documentos que están en escuela, que se han graduado de la high school, que están posiblemente en la universidad,
sí.
Y que entraron al país antes de los 15 años, que tienen mínimo 15 años en el país y con permiso 5 años en el país. Y entonces a esas personas les daría el derecho a un camino a la residencia. Entonces el DREAM Act, como le digo, tiene 10 años que se ha propuesto en el Senado, en la Cámara de Representantes, y en sí el año pasado vimos que se aprobó en el Senado, con permiso se aprobó en la Cámara de Representantes, veces, pero en el Senado nos faltaron cinco votos. Y importante también que parte de esta propuesta es que si quieres tú participar en el ejército, también te dan la oportunidad a la residencia. Y pues es importante que en nuestra comunidad muchos de nuestros jóvenes sí van a la escuela, sí van a la universidad, pero la gran mayoría no acaban la escuela y posiblemente ellos entrarían por el ángulo del ejército.
Ya. Víctor, entiendo que hay aproximadamente unos 65,000 estudiantes cada año que terminan el high school aquí en los Estados Unidos, pero no pueden ir al colegio, al college, a la universidad. ¿Qué es lo que pasa con esos estudiantes?
Bueno, pues aquí en California, cuando se gradúan de la high school, sí tienen la oportunidad de enlistarse en la universidad, en un colegio comunitario. Se conoce aquí en California como la propuesta del 540, el Marco Feuerbach que empujó esa propuesta. Lo que no les dan, aquí lo importante, es ayuda financiera. Entonces, ahí es cuando los detiene de seguir con su educación, porque definitivamente sí les cobran bastante en las universidades, y si no tienen ese apoyo económico, pues no van a poder seguir con su educación.
Exactamente. Exactamente. Víctor, lo voy a trasladar ahora a Arnoldo, que tiene otras preguntas para hacer también esto en inglés.
¿Cómo no?
Encantado.
Okay. Well, thank you, Victor and Salvi. I know you were talking about the Dream Act, so I don't know what, but my question is, just a couple of days ago, there were some new hearings in Congress about the Dream Act. How did it get back on the agenda, and what happened then?
Well, yes, the Dream Act has been proposed this year at the Senate, and so the Dream Act, as I indicated in Spanish, has been presented now for more than 10 years in the United States Congress. And what we saw last year is that the House of Representatives actually voted for the Dream Act, but in the Senate, we fell short 5 votes in order for it to become a law. So this year, they're trying again, and the Dreamers, the students who are pushing this effort, they're not giving up. They're not staying quiet. They're being very brave. A lot of them are coming out and saying, look, I'm here without documents, knowing that there is a risk that they can be detained. And so this momentum, this pressure from the undocumented community has now turned into a hearing in the Senate. And a lot of folks did show up to talk about the Dream Act. We had a person from the military, Margaret Stock, who indicated how important immigrants were for our military, because the Dream Act also has that aspect of the law. In other words, if you want to participate and join and help our military forces, you also have an opportunity for a path to legalization. Obviously, the Dream Act is known for the education aspect of the law, but certainly we can see that it benefits people who want to go to school and people who want to help out in the military. So the hearings were wonderful. The information was abundant. And at the end of the hearing, I think more people understood where these folks were coming from and why we should support and pass the Dream Act.
Do those students have, are there any rights they have right now, or really they're really just beyond beyond the law now? Is that what's really we're talking about?
Well, Dream Act students, as well as any other person who's in the country without documents, they do have rights. In other words, if they are arrested, an arrest doesn't automatically lead to an immediate deportation. That's where immigration law comes in. And, you know, there's a certain process and procedure that needs to be followed. If someone is arrested, they will be given a hearing before an immigration judge. And then at that point, we have to analyze the case to see if there's any relief, any defenses that we can present to be able to allow the individual to remain in the country. Obviously, a lot of the Dreamers don't want to end up in that situation, because once you're before an immigration judge, sooner or later, The judge will say, yes, you can stay, or no, you cannot. And certainly for most of these folks who have a promising future, you know, they don't want to face that immediate decision. However, the Dreamers are so brave that now, you know, they're coming out and they're saying, look, I'm here without documents. You know, I can't stand it anymore. I can help this country. Allow me to be part of the country. I've been part of the fabric of our society, and I just want to be able to contribute back what I've learned so far. So, you know, it's a difficult situation for people to find themselves if they are before an immigration judge, but it's important to know that there is a procedure. And we're going to talk later about this, these two memorandums that were issued. These memorandums can certainly help some of these Dream Act students.
Mm. Oh, interesting. When somebody comes to you, somebody who needs your help, what is that process? How do they find an immigration lawyer who can help them in that situation? And what is the process through the courts and legal system?
Well, it's important that there are many attorneys as well as many community-based organizations that help immigrants who find themselves in this situation. And so, obviously the first important part is to find that right attorney. And that's important because, unfortunately, in the immigrant community, there's a lot of fraud. It's big business to prey upon vulnerable immigrants. And so we have fake lawyers. We have these notaries that we know promise individuals things that simply don't exist in the law and turn them into immigration and commit all these mistakes. So it's important to find, an attorney that's qualified, an attorney that knows what they're doing and that are competent. Once that attorney analyzes the case, then we can strategize as to what's the best approach. Immigration law changes every day, whether it be through Congress, whether it be through court cases from the Court of Appeals or the district courts or even the immigration courts. People have to be up to date with the information, and that's what makes immigration law so different from other areas because it changes so constantly, and you have to be up to date with all the new changes.
So is the law are these judgments that come down from judges or from the politicians, is it both
well, it's both. Well, one, because the politicians are the ones that create the laws. And we can't forget that. There's a lot of times that people view ICE or, you know, the immigration authorities for arresting folks and things of that nature. But all they're doing is implementing the laws that the politicians pass. That's important to clear up. But at the same time, judges make decisions on whether people can remain in the country or not. Immigration officers also decide whether or not you have a right to a work permit, whether or not you have a right to a green card, whether or not you have a right to remain in the country and work. And so there's different types of procedures. It really depends on your type of case. Immigration law touches various areas of the law, entertainment law. For example, when Bono comes here and sings and performs, they need a visa. Mm-hmm. When we have Beckham who comes here and plays soccer, they need a visa. So all these folks need to come through immigration attorneys, and so certainly it touches many areas of the law.
Oh, fascinating. Thank you.
Víctor, yo he estado escuchando algo relacionado con una verificación e-verified. ¿Nos puedes explicar un poco de qué es lo que significa esto y en qué está? Creo que es una ley que va a salir en la cual se tienen que verificar, los empleadores tienen que verificar a sus empleados a través de un sitio del gobierno, algo por el estilo. Yo no estoy tan al tanto, ¿nos podrías tú explicar sobre esto?
¿Cómo no? El programa E-Verify es para verificar el estatus de el trabajador. En otras palabras, si tiene papeles o no, si tiene documentos, si tiene el derecho de trabajar. Y lo que ha pasado es que el programa actualmente E-Verify es un programa voluntario. ¿Verdad? Primero es voluntario. En otras palabras, si las compañías quieren participar en este programa, se enlistan, en sí se hace por computadora, tienen que entrar y en sí registrarse ellos, y de esa manera ellos verifican si sus empleados tienen los documentos o no. Yeah. Sin embargo, el programa de E-Verify tiene muchos problemas.
Yeah.
Cometen muchos errores, y especialmente en nuestra comunidad. En nuestra comunidad donde existen dos apellidos, o cuando se casa alguien y cambia de apellido.
Claro.
Todo eso sale inconsistente en el programa de E-Verify. Entonces, en tu trabajo te dicen, mira, tu nombre no concuerda con tu seguro social. Y tienes que arreglar esto o te voy a tener que despedir.
Sí.
Entonces, ese es el programa. Sin embargo, ahorita hay un movimiento del congresista Lamar Smith. En sí, él es el encargado del subcomité de migración en la Cámara de Representantes. Él ya propuso una ley para hacer E-Verify obligatorio en todos los Estados Unidos. Todas las compañías van a tener que participar en este programa, y tiene los votos en sí en la Cámara de Representantes. No sé si tenga los votos en el Senado, pero ese es un gran peligro para nuestra economía, para nuestros negocios,
sí.
Especialmente los negocios pequeños, que no tienen tiempo para gastar en una computadora, estar revisando todo esto. Les gasta el tiempo cuando sabemos que el negocio pequeño pues se tiene que enfocar en el negocio que tiene enfrente de ellos y no gastar. Definitivamente esto afecta a nuestra economía, a nuestros trabajadores, y es una mala idea. Lo que ayudaría sería una reforma más amplia para arreglar este problema, y en sí poniendo pedacitos, curitas para querer tapar el problema, no nos ayuda. Necesitamos
una reforma visión amplia. General.
Así es, sí.
Encantado. Arnold.
Well, thank you, Victor. And now another, we're talking about a lot of federal issues, but some states have also taken things in their own hands to change the immigration laws, namely Arizona and Georgia. And some things have been happening this month about that. Could you give us some insight into how the states are dealing with this?
Sure. You know, it's interesting because every time the first couple of classes in my law school class about immigration, we cover the foundation of immigration law. In other words, the first question that we ask is, who has the power over immigration law? And over 100 years, the Supreme Court has said that immigration is a federal issue, that the federal government is the only entity that can control immigration law. So we know what the law says. However, some of the states, they feel a little desperate. They want to do something about the immigration issue, and so they've acted on the issue, like Arizona, Utah. But what we're seeing is what the law says. In other words, with the Arizona case, the courts shot it down. In Utah, the courts shot it down. In Indiana, they shot it down. In Georgia, they shot it down. And so we still have, for example, in South Carolina and Alabama, and those lawsuits are going forward. But we expect the same type of result, simply because the Supreme Court for over 100 years has said, look, when it comes to immigration, the states cannot act, cannot enforce immigration laws. It's really the obligation of the states, the federal government. Now, what's important is that this recent decision from Georgia, the judge made an interesting finding. One of the arguments that the states are arguing and presenting in these lawsuits is, look, the federal government isn't doing anything to stop illegal immigration. Interesting that the judge said, look, that argument doesn't have any merit, and it's based on myth. And they outlined everything that the government has been doing to stop immigration. For example, all the border patrol that they've added in the last 10 years. For example, the National Guard is on the border. The numbers of arrests and deportations in the last couple of years that have surpassed all the numbers in history, and also the numbers of dropped of arrests at the border. All of this indicates that the federal government is doing something. But unfortunately, when it comes to the states and when it comes to the issue of immigration, it's so tied to politics that you know, a lot of the bad faith politicians get involved in these types of issues just to create problems and try to make a name for themselves.
Right. And, well, that's the thing. Once somebody is inside, it really becomes the state's problems. Basically, the feds wash their hands of it once they've gone across the border, obviously, and it does become a state responsibility.
Well, it's a state responsibility in the sense that they have another individual in that state. But as far as being able to arrest somebody, when it comes to actually wanting to deport somebody, the states don't have that power. That power comes from the federal government. Again, you know, the federal government has certain limitations and resources. Right now with the economy the way it is, certainly they have priorities. They've set priorities. We're going to seek out the most dangerous individuals in our communities and deport them. We're going to seek out folks who have previous deportations and have never left. So they have categories of priorities simply because it's smart enforcement. We simply don't have the resources to deport 10, 11, 12 million people at one time or throughout an extended period of time. So certainly the states would want the federal government to act faster, but the federal government has its limitations, and they would rather prioritize.
Víctor, muchas gracias. Todo muy claro. ¿Qué podríamos hacer, digamos, la comunidad de habla española para podernos ayudar a nosotros mismos? ¿Qué podríamos, digamos, qué mensaje podríamos darle a ellos?
Bueno, primero yo creo, es una pregunta muy importante. Primero yo creo que nos tenemos que educar. Estar al tanto de los cambios de inmigración,
claro.
Sea por el radio, programas como este, en las noticias, en programas, tenemos que saber lo que está pasando, y eso es algo que nuestra comunidad ha aprendido en estos últimos 5 años, con todas las marchas, las participaciones de las manifestaciones. Ha enseñado a nuestra comunidad el juego político envuelto con el tema de inmigración. Entonces, eso es lo primero. Yo creo que la educación, también saber que aunque las leyes ahorita no nos favorecen, las leyes cambian.
Claro.
Y es cuestión de que nosotros podamos sostener esta mala racha, se puede decir, y va a llegar ese momento, tarde o temprano, tiene que haber una reforma, simplemente porque no puede seguir la situación así. Lo sabemos, afecta a nuestras compañías, a nuestros trabajadores, a nuestra economía. Sabemos que va a haber un cambio. La cosa es que nuestros líderes políticos tengan la fortaleza para poder empujar este tema adelante.
Víctor, quiero agradecerte en lo personal y por toda la comunidad de habla hispana de tu ayuda, de tu trabajo que estás haciendo, y sinceramente de todo corazón te estoy agradeciendo. Por el momento yo me estoy despidiendo de ti, voy a dejar todo en manos de Arnold. Y nuevamente, muchas gracias.
No, gracias a ti, y pues nosotros vamos a seguir empujando y ayudando a nuestra comunidad, de eso se trata. Yo soy inmigrante, mucha gente positiva empuja estos temas, y queremos al fin pues llegar a un acuerdo donde todos pueden beneficiarse de un sistema que ahorita no funciona, pero si lo reformamos, va a ayudar a todos.
Correcto.
Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias a ti.
Well, thank you, Salvi. And Victor, if you had had the power, what would you see as a logical process to really reform the whole immigration policy? What would be the basically ideal way to solve these problems?
Well, it's an interesting question, but it's not something, you know, out of the blue that we can't talk about, because we've been discussing immigration at least at the federal level now for the past 5, 6, even 10 years. And I think our Congress, whether it's the House or the Senate, they know the issues. We've discussed them. It's not, you know, this is not rocket science. People have proposed ways to fix our broken immigration system. So the outline is there. there. And usually that outline involves more security at the border, make sure that we can control our borders. Second of all, you know, be able to control who works here legally, be able to focus on employers who abuse folks. And number three, create a path to legalization for the folks that are in here in the United States, that have been here for 10, 20 years, that are part of our fabric. Allow them to get in line so that, you know, they can little by little be able to earn their way by paying a penalty, by learning English. Again, this is not nothing new. This is what's been proposed now from both sides of the aisle for the past 5 years. It's just a matter of us sitting down and with our politicians and saying, look, it's time to get this done. You know, our economy needs it. Our country needs it. Our communities need this. And so it's just a matter of politicians, you know, sitting down and doing the work that we elect them to do. You know, certainly one of the questions that people always ask is, well, how do we stop the future flow? How can we make sure that this will not happen again? You know, and we do that by reforming our laws and creating programs, for example, a guest worker program, when there is a need for individuals to be able to work in the United States, then we can regulate that flow. Right. We can allow individuals to say, okay, you can come here for a certain period amount of time, work, do what you have to do, and then go back. A lot of individuals want to do that, but there is no mechanism now for them to do that. So when people say, get in line, they have to get in line. My response is, what line? We haven't created a line for this individuals to try to do this. So certainly, you know, it's a difficult issue, but it's not a new issue. And that's something that everybody has to understand, and our politicians have to understand. They can't be afraid to tackle difficult situations. They have to be able to sit down, negotiate, and do what we voted them to do, the hard work. If being in Congress was difficult, then don't apply. Right. We know that you have to work. So we hope that you start doing some of the work that we require and that our country requires.
Right, very good point. And, you know, obviously it's running up to the election next year. How do you differentiate between politicians doing things for their election rather than for a result? Is that difficult for you to... In that respect, are they for real, or is this just, you know, something put on for the election?
Well, you know, not at all. I mean, I started this conversation by saying that immigration is tied to politics, and it's been tied to politics throughout American history. Every time there was some type of immigration law that was passed, you can see our society and what our society was going through, and we'll understand why the law changed. So this is nothing new. This has happened before in our history, so certainly it's nothing new. And when we hear politicians get up and talk, you know, we understand that there is a political element to their speech, and President Obama is no different. And so when he gets up and he talks and he speaks very beautifully, we say great, but we want to see action.
Right.
You know, and when we see, for example, Republicans, who most of them, a lot of them, do oppose any type of immigration reform, when we say that, when we hear that, well, the federal government isn't doing anything, people in the state say that, then we say, talk to your congressperson then. Have them do something and take that message to the federal government so they can do something. The elections are coming up, you know, and so, you know, folks are lining up. They understand the Latino vote. They understand that critical states are going to be decided by the Latino vote. Florida, New Mexico, Nevada, Colorado, all red states in the past, and now they're turning blue. And so certainly all of that is a reality. But the bottom line is that we need to push the politics aside. We need to push the rhetoric to the side and just look at the science. Study after study says immigrants help the United States. There was a recent study that the Fortune 500 companies, 40% of them are created and built by immigrants.
Wow.
So again, you know, immigrants are good for this country. You know, I don't think anybody supports anybody who is creating a bad situation for a community, violent offenders. I don't think anybody supports that. But there are many good people here that create jobs by investing in our country that come from other countries. We need to respect that. We need to be able to recognize that. And these are the folks that we want. These are the folks that we need. We need more immigrants to infuse the energy of this country and allow us to continue to be great.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Who should people contact? Is there somebody, you know, in the government specifically who would fall on friendly ears if people want to try and do something, do their civic duty?
Well, you know, we always encourage folks to contact their own representatives, whether it be a congressperson or your senator in your country, in your state. Contact them about immigration. They all have folks that deal with the immigration issues in their offices. You know, there's also a lot of community-based organizations out there that are regularly, daily, on a daily basis, working on these issues. So there's a lot of work to be done, and certainly, you know, everybody needs volunteers. And what we want people to understand is that beyond the rhetoric, there's good that these immigrants do. There's good stuff here that we need to recognize, and there's reports out there, and you can get a lot of this information on our website. If you go to AILA.org, which is AILA.org, you'll find a lot of these reports there, a lot of this information. We encourage you to visit our website. We encourage you to do research on the issue, because when it comes to the science, we don't lose. When it comes to the rhetoric, that's when it gets tough, because, you know, there's a lot of yelling, there's a lot of shouting, but we forget the facts, we forget the actual statistics, because once we read them, and once we reveal what these studies say, you know, the conclusion is that immigrants are good for the United States.
Right. Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much, Victor, for a very informative interview. I really appreciate it, and doing it in two languages.
Well, that was a first, but I hope I get to do it again.
Oh, great. we'll try and do it again as this progresses through the federal system.
Sure, no problem. Thank you for the invitation, you know, I hope we do it again sometime.
Thank you, Victor.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And thank you very much, Salvi Babul, for providing the Spanish language questions. Can you give us some, I think, jump out at you from his answers in Spanish?
The important thing is that he got the message to us that we need to get educated about the laws in immigration. That's what all the Hispanic community can do to help themselves, is to get educated. The other thing that I perceive from all his answer is just his very deep knowledge in the theme, and his very sincere will and understanding to help people around.
Well, thank you very much, Salvi.
You're very welcome, Arnoldo.